Call to order the Senate Committee on General Government, Consumer, and Small Business Protection. Colleagues, today is Wednesday, May 18th. We're convened for work sessions and public hearing and possible work sessions on several bills. For those who are interested in the workflow today, I anticipate going with House Bill 2470 first, House Bill 3590 second, then up to House Bill 2212 for a work session, House Bill 2247 for possible work session, and then a work session on 2809 and a work session on House Bill 3000. So that being said, I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2470.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2470 comes through the House on a vote of 49-10. The measure exempts from public meetings law meetings of the Interagency Compliance Network and of member agencies of the Interagency Compliance Network. The measure has an emergency clause, would take effect upon signature by the governor, has no revenue or fiscal impact, no amendments, Mr. Chair.
All right. Can we bring up Representative Holvey and Keith Dubenovich?
Oh, no, I am going to vote no. No, I'm not.
It balances me out, right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, Paul Holvey, State Representative, District 8, and co-chair of the House Committee on General Government and Consumer Protection. I just wanted to come and offer a couple quick comments about this bill. It did have a few no votes on the floor, but not in the committee. And I think I can't exactly explain why. It's a relatively simple bill that basically clarifies that the Interagency Compliance Network is not subject to public meetings law. And first, let me just give a brief description of the Interagency Compliance Network. It is a group of several different agencies that look at employment laws and employment records. They do audits. They coordinate investigations. They share data. And this information is relatively sensitive and is generally private in nature because it's about employment records and money and Social Security numbers and things like that that the agencies share in their duties of enforcing the law. The Interagency Compliance Network is a Department of Revenue, Department of Justice, Employment Department, and a few others that basically coordinate their activities for efficiencies more than anything else, but also to help each other out in these types of investigations because they usually include all of those agencies, and so it makes sense for them to coordinate. A bill was passed in a previous session, let's just say, about this Interagency Compliance Network, and it did, Patrick probably remembers, but it did become a question about whether this group was subject to public meetings law. They're not a state agency. The state agencies, of course, are subject to a lot of things, and the information they deal with wouldn't be appropriate to be subject to public meeting law. And that's essentially all this bill does is clarify that. So it is relatively simple and happy to answer any questions, but
Keith.
Chair Shields, Vice Chair George, members of the committee, my name is Keith Dubenovich. I'm Chief of Staff to the Attorney General. As Representative Holvey explained, the Interagency Compliance Network was created in 2009. The purpose was to encourage state agencies to coordinate our investigations and enforcement actions. That work did begin in 2009 and continues. When we coordinated the activities, we recognized that data sharing and information sharing was critically important to making our work more efficient. What we had found prior to 2009 is that there would be multiple agencies who sometimes would be auditing the same company, and we felt that if we coordinated our activities, we could reduce the burden on the business and reduce the work that the state was doing. However, in creating the interagency cooperation network, we recognized that the workings of that network may very well come into public hands unless we had the protections that are afforded by House Bill 2470. And so this bill, frankly, will make our work easier than presently. And let me give you an example. A company may be doing work and may not be properly reporting whether people are working for it are employees or not. Well, that would include, therefore, the Employment Department, possibly DCBS through the Workers' Compensation Plan, possibly the Department of Revenue if they're not properly paying payroll taxes, and possibly the Department of Justice if they are criminally exposed. By coordinating our activities and sharing information, it makes our job a lot easier. But as a law enforcement function, we obviously do not want to invite the public to hear our communications about our plans for the audit, what companies we're looking at, things of that sort. This bill does not change the confidential nature of the documents that are in the possession of the agency itself. All this does is facilitate the communications between the members of this agency, members of the interagency compliance network. It will simply facilitate the work that we're already doing.
Okay. Senator George.
Thank you. Obviously, I'm always nervous about excluding the public from anything that government does. So it's a pretty high hurdle for me to get here. So when you go into, like, county commissions and city councils, there's executive session. People can move into executive session. Why wouldn't it be more appropriate to allow an executive session when you're talking about these confidential things, but when you're talking about policy issues or more structural issues, it's still open to the public?
Chair Shields, Vice Chair George, the way this bill would work is it would essentially act as if an independent agency was doing its own investigation. For example, if DCBS, through its Workers' Compensation Division, was going to conduct an investigation and an audit of a company, their initial discussions and their internal workings have their own protections, the goal being that you need to encourage agency employees to discuss what they're working on without calling a public meeting and posting a public agenda. This bill essentially allows us to coordinate those exact same functions but does not change the public's access to the individual agency's work. The reality is that the Interagency Compliance Network doesn't create much information, and so it's not going to change the public's access to what may or may not be already accessible in the Workers' Comp Division or in the Employment Department or in any other agency. I don't know if that answers your question, but essentially we're not changing access to existing agency process.
And I'd just follow up that with that, and Keith, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think as far as the policy decision making and the discussion about policies, that's really done by the agency and not by this particular interagency compliance network. They are essentially an enforcement arm, and carrying out the policy that comes from this legislature and from the agency itself. So the access for the public to the information, the policy, is through the agency.
Yep, follow up.
After the investigation's over, are the discussions between these agencies then open to public records requests?
Chair Shields, Senator George, the records are maintained by the individual agency. So, for example, if a matter was discussed in the interagency compliance network and referred over to our criminal justice division, and we initiated an investigation and then closed our file, whatever records we have would be then available for public review.
But as far as the emails through this entity, would those records be available for the public to access after the investigation is done?
Chair Shields, Vice Chair George, If a member of the Department of Justice was part of those communications, the answer is yes, because they would be part of our file and therefore subject to a public records request for information in our possession.
So all we're doing with this bill is saying for meetings of these particular agencies when they get together, that is exempt from the, you know, notice requirements, the 24-hour posting requirements, and what else is required of a public meeting? Oh, the recordation
right.
of the proceedings. Okay. Any, Senator Boquist?
Just a comment. I was looking at the existing law, and you know, A through G are basically investigatory and auditing type functions, which would not normally be in the public like to start with. And only two of the functions they do, which is engage in public outreach and, you know, other action, which I always love this, take other actions member agencies deem appropriate. That's kind of like cashing a blank check with a $1 million bank account. But having said that, I mean, only H and I appear to have, you know, much exposure to start with. The first ones are all really investigatory functions all the way down through the list. I'm like Senator George, I'm a little nervous of this, but I think Representative Holby is right that looks like 95% of what they do probably isn't what you want on the front page of the newspaper, or you're going to get sued for somebody's personal information being out there without due process.
That's right. And again, to confirm and put on the record, we're not exempting anything from public disclosure with this bill. All we're saying is you don't have to meet the public meeting requirements of posting, recordation, and notice.
Chair Shields, as I've said, the documents and information that are in the agency's possession that are listed here will remain accessible to the public in the same manner that they presently are.
Okay, great.
You okay with this?
I like it, but okay.
I hear you. One final comment, and always dangerous to make a final comment, but Senator Boquist just made me think about it. Most of the public outreach that I have seen so far has actually not been done by this particular agency. It's actually been done by the individual agencies in terms of these laws, but I do note that that's in there, but I don't know that just as you were doing an investigation with criminal, it may be that somebody's completely innocent, and you certainly wouldn't want to have something plastered on the front page of the news that a business is being investigated for, you know, fraud or money laundering or something like that, and then find out that they're innocent and you've just destroyed their reputation. So this is something I think that the business community also doesn't want to see on the front page either.
All right, fair enough. Senator George,
one work session?
No, not yet. So would anybody else like to testify on House Bill 2470? All right. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2470 and open a work session on House Bill 2470.
Mr. Chair, I reluctantly move House Bill 2470 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George joyfully moves House Bill 2470 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
And just for the record, it's 2H and 2I, which are the only real public disclosure portions of their mission. So.
All right. Debbie, please call the roll.
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Boquist?
Yeah.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Yeah.
Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Senator Bonamici, would you carry that?
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did let me do it?
I'm sure. I don't want to forest products. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2470 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3590. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3590 comes to the House on a vote of 59-0. Has a no revenue impact, minimal fiscal impact, no amendments. The measure permits a child weighing more than 40 pounds and who is shorter than 4 feet 9 inches tall to use either a child safety system designed for children weighing more than 40 pounds or a booster seat. It provides that a booster seat is not required if the rear seat is not equipped with shoulder belts and the child is secured with a lap belt. That's pretty much all I have for you, other than I probably should mention that we received several pieces of testimony prior to the meeting, and I believe those were provided by the folks who are going to be speaking to us, so I can let them speak to us.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Monroe.
For the record, 30 years ago, I was the principal sponsor of the original child care, child restraint law, have passed the legislature and has been protecting young children in this state for the last 30 years.
Thank you, Representative Boone. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for agreeing to hear our bill. And what a great segue, Senator Monroe, into this. I will speak briefly and then let the experts take over. This bill was brought to me by my constituent, Officer Nick Troxell from Tillamook PD, and he saw, I think it's the very best example of legislating that we can do. There's a problem with the law. A small change can change it, make it much better, and that's what we're here to do today. And so with that, I will let him explain to you why he brought it to me and what we intend to do.
Perfect. Thank you, Representative Boone. Chair Shields and Vice Chair George and members of the committee, my name is Nick Troxell. I work for the City of Tillamook Police Department. And I'm certified with Safe Kids Worldwide as a child passenger safety seat technician. I'm here today in favor of House Bill 3590, which will help to simplify the requirements for types of child restraint systems for children weighing over 40 pounds. Currently, Oregon Revised Statute states that a child weighing 40 pounds or more who's riding in a forward-facing child passenger safety seat with a five-point harness in a seat designed for a child up to 80 pounds would be in violation of our current Oregon state law, even though that would be the safest way for them to ride. You could use a NASCAR race car driver, for example. They're in a five-point harness as well. Even though the child's riding in the safest manner suggested by the manufacturer and would be considered best practice, they would still be in violation of the seatbelt laws as written today. Therefore, it's a simple language housekeeping change is what's being proposed, and I would recommend the statute be amended as described in House Bill 3590. As a police officer, as a child passenger safety seat technician, a member of the Tillamook County Traffic Safety Commission, and overall traffic safety advocate, I am here to show my support in regards to this bill. I feel passionate about this and feel passionate about keeping our children safe riding throughout the state of Oregon, and I hope you do as well. I would open it to any questions, or if you could wait for all of us, that's up to you.
Okay. Why don't we keep going?
Perfect. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Shields, Vice Chair George, and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Oliver. I'm a law enforcement officer employed by the Lake Oswego Police Department. I'm also a nationally certified crash reconstructionist and a nationally certified child passenger safety technician instructor. I've been involved in child passenger safety for probably about 8 years, and I've been in crash reconstruction for about 11 or 12 years. When the law was originally amended back in 2007 to create the law the way it is now, that was a perfect law that we had for the technology we had at the time. There were very, very few child safety seats that had the five-point harness system that went beyond 40 pounds. So when the law was amended, it was amended for what we needed at the time. And I'm not real sure if it was really foreseeable at that point that we were going to have these higher weight-rated harness system seats in such abundant supply that we have now. You know, something like Officer Troxell said, some of them go up to 80 pounds. The unfortunate thing is when I was instructing students in the child passenger technician training, and I think I might have instructed Nick on that as well, we always brought that up when we talked about Oregon law and state laws. The problem with the Oregon law that we have now is that people are actually getting cited for using a Britax marathon seat, which goes up to 65 pounds with the internal harness system. And our current law says that's illegal. They have to be in a booster seat. And officers were actually citing parents that were having their children in safer car seat systems just because of what the law was saying. And so that's part of the reason, well, the big part of the reason why we're here to try to get this changed is because there are parents out there that are afraid to put their children in these much safer seats because they're afraid of receiving a traffic citation. And as a crash reconstructionist, I know from ocular kinematics and injury pattern and injury force and force load on the body that, you know, like Officer Troxell said, in NASCAR, they use five-point harness systems because they're much safer. And the reason they're much safer is because they spread the crash forces over a wider area of the body, not just in three places but in five. So the one area of the body doesn't have to take more force of the crash, if you will, or more impulse than the rest. So it increases the likelihood that the child's not going to die or be severely injured. And so, again, I fully support House Bill 3590 to change the law so that we can have these kids riding around legally in these higher weight-rated harness system seats. I know when I testified before the House, the question was brought up, or concern was, well, aren't we just going to be going through this again in another 4 or 5 years when the technology increases? And I don't think that's going to happen because with changing this law, all it's doing is saying that, no, we're not requiring you to go into a booster seat after 40 pounds. It's an option, but you can use other child seat systems that are rated for kids above 40 pounds. And even if the harness systems got really, really good and they went up to 200 pounds, that would still cover that that technology increase. And I don't foresee any other technology increases that would be, you know, affected by the law that we have now, other than the problem that we have now that's hopefully going to get changed by you guys. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Chair Shields and members of the committee, my name is Sandy Holt. I'm with the Alliance for Community Traffic Safety in Oregon, and I am the Child Passenger Safety Certification and Training Coordinator. And I support exactly what the two officers here have said today. The only thing I would like to add is that I did bring a couple examples of car seats that are down here in front. The blue one is a five-point harness like what we've been talking about, and the little red one is a booster seat. And the other issue that hasn't been brought up is we have a group of children who are obese or overweight. So we have two-year-olds that are over 40 pounds, and to put them in a booster seat is just not safe. They're just not behaviorally ready to be in that seat. So we want that this would also cover those kids as well as special needs kids who are required to have a five-point harness system. I have a little friend who has cerebral palsy who can sit in a conventional car seat like this, so her parents don't have to go purchase a special needs seat. But she's over 40 pounds as well, so technically she's breaking the law by riding in that seat.
All right. Good bill. Questions?
I have a question.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you. Thank you for the bill. I remember the discussion in 2007. It came through the House Judiciary Committee. My concern is about lap belts, because even under this version of the bill, it looks like you could still have a child sitting in the backseat of a car with just a lap belt. Is that the way you read this as well?
The lap belt only, I'm sorry, Senator Shields, Senator Bonamici, members of the committee. The lap belt, the exemption that you're talking about has to do with the booster seat exemption, and it says that if, I believe that's what you're referring to, is that if the vehicle has no lap and shoulder belts in the back, they're all lap-only belts, then the child would not be required to use a booster seat, because you cannot use a booster seat with a lap-only belt. It would actually be more dangerous to do that than to not use the booster seat. The whole idea behind the booster seat is just to raise the child up so the lap and shoulder belt both fit them correctly. You know, if there was an issue with, and to be quite honest, I don't see very many vehicles anymore with lap-only belts, so I think that's probably going to be a non-issue, especially as time goes on. They're just not going to be out there. If there is an issue with that, you know, you could always instruct the parents, and that's what we do as technicians, is to use a safer seat. So if there's an internal five-point harness system seat that goes up to 80 pounds, which there are, and the people have only lap-only belts in the back, then the recommendation would be, if the child's under, you know, 80, under 65 pounds, is to use one of these internal harness system seats and secure it with the lap-only belt, because you can do that.
And so, can I ask a follow-up? So the five-point, the blue seat there, can you put that in with just a lap belt? You don't need that.
Yes.
Further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Sure.
Thank you.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, it's all coming back to me now, 30 years ago, and the arguments were way different in those days. They were, you're inflicting your will on parental rights. We have a right to buckle our kid up or not. The other argument I heard many times was, you'd have to tranquilize my kid to get him to ride in a child seat. He'd be screaming and hollering the whole time. And at that time, I had a child that was about 7 years old or so, who had always ridden in a child seat and had no problem and was very active. So we overcame some of those arguments. This bill obviously has evolved over the years as technology has evolved, and that's very, very appropriate. I remember the testimony from a lady 30 years ago that said, her name was Kim Katzian from Washington County, and she said that she had her her infant, year-and-a-half-old child, in an infant seat, buckled in, and they went to the cemetery to visit her parents' grave, and left the child in the car while they went to look at the grave, and the brake let go, and the car went down a very steep hill, crashed, totaling the car. She ran down to the wreck in total panic, found the child inside the car, uninjured, because she was in the infant seat. Actually, a small child in an automobile crash, in a properly restrained, is safer than an adult, because it takes, the car has to collapse further before it impacts their area. Thank you for your good work. Thank you for this bill updating again what has been an Oregon tradition of good passenger restraint legislation.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Thanks for coming to bring this bill forward. All right. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3590 and open a work session on House Bill 3590. Senator George.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3590 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 3590 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Just a quick comment, because one of the interesting issues that comes out of this is when you have people who are less than 4 foot, who are not children, who are less than 4 foot 9 inches tall, which, believe it or not, in the old days of Oregon history, most everybody was pretty short. And that's actually come up as an issue multiple times, and we've never really addressed that issue. I mean, I have a child, not a child, I have a teenager who technically doesn't fit the qualifications but is less than 4 foot 9, and it's always open to this argument of, you know, how much revenue the local police department wants to try and raise versus how good the lawyers I can hire are, which I think is ridiculous. So,
all right. Thank you. Debbie, can you please call the roll?
Senator Bonamici?
Excused.
Senator Boquist?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Senator Monroe, would you like to carry that?
I'd be more than happy to.
All right.
When did you carry the first one?
Nostalgic.
This history lesson.
Oh, you didn't carry the
close the work session on House Bill 3590.
Okay. Passed in 81.
And, I will open the work session on House Bill 2212. Patrick, you want to update us where we are?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2212 is a measure that prohibits floor order facilitators from receiving or charging consideration for individual orders with certain exceptions. It requires floor order facilitators pay delivery charges and other amounts to direct providers of floral plant arrangements or related services within a reasonable time period. Designates violations as an unlawful trade practice. The measure has an emergency clause and would take effect upon passage. There's no fiscal revenue impact to the measure, no amendments to the measure. We heard this bill originally on April 27th. And so we had a hearing on it at that time, and that's where we stand, Mr. Chair.
All right. We are in work session. Senator Monroe, would you like to make a motion?
I'd be happy to move that we send House Bill 2212 to the...
Let's stand at ease for a moment.
All right.
We'll come out of standing and ease. And
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Once again, I move House Bill 2212 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Monroe has moved House Bill 2212 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Hold on tight, everybody. All right. Is there a discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Let Senator George go first.
I was trying to be persuaded by the good senator from West Valley's attempt to inject government in every single transaction that ever happens between business, but I just couldn't get there, so I'm going to be voting no.
All right. We know whose side Senator George is on.
And Mr. Chair, there are rare times in history.
History, I like that.
Okay. In which various businesses try to resolve various issues. And this is basically an electronic internet case in which, you know, there are good things about the internet and there are bad things. And this has been around several times before. And, you know, I've had personal experience and personal firsthand experience of women who are in my family who have been ripped off in this particular process and who are very vocal about that. And, you know, if this doesn't turn out the way it's supposed to turn out, I would be happy to join Senator George later at repealing this and looking at a different version of solving this. So.
All right.
Question, Mr. Chair?
Yes, okay.
So it's a good senator from West Valley complaining about the price somebody charges to exercise a certain business activity. Is that what the complaint is? It's just the threshold at some point there's a certain amount of profit that we disagree with?
No, I'd be happy to answer that question, Mr. Sheriff.
What the issue boils down to is a fairness. This is once someone pays a dollar for something and they expect to have X amount of value delivered someplace else for what they paid for and they're cheated out of their money, it is, of course, you know, behooves us to go back and take corrections.
All right. No further discussion. Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Senator Bonamici?
Excused.
Senator Boquist?
Yes.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
No. No.
And Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye.
Mr. Chair, I would also like to point out that there was no opposition testimony to this bill in committee.
That's correct. There wasn't. Senator Boquist, would you be interested in carrying that bill?
No, please? I would not.
All right. Well,
there might be a lot of questions in the quick carrier if he does that.
I'll cut you some slack. Let's see. Senator Monroe did the last one. I will do this one. Why not?
I was looking forward to Boquist carrying it.
Larry and I have already sparred over one of our bills on the floor before. So.
Okay.
All right. I will close the work session on House Bill 2212 and open a work session on House Bill 2247. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2247, we heard, we had our first hearing on this on Monday. It's the measure that declares that any document or other information related to an audit of a public body is not disclosable until the final audit report is issued or an audit is abandoned. The measure has no amendment, no fiscal impact, no revenue impact. The House vote was 58-0, and that's where we stand, Mr. Chair.
All right, Patrick. Let's see. We are in work session. Before I actually call for a vote, I just wanted to get a sense of the committee if you're comfortable with this bill before we actually engage in that motion. I think in part because the newspaper association, the press, was involved in negotiating this and got to an acceptable point on it, that gives me some solace that that this will not encumber the public's ability to figure out what its government is up to. So I would be inclined to be a yes, but I'd like to see what the sense of the committee is. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've become educated in, you know, how the audit process works, you know, as we've transitioned to where policy committees are more involved on a day-to-day basis. And until you know, when you're in this process, when you're in the audit process and looking at it, I mean, it's like smoke. You don't know where, you know there's a fire, but you know where the smoke is coming from. You don't know what's causing the smoke. And it's just, you start looking at the audits and you find out that, you know, how they audit and what a financial person says is what's serious, what's not serious, so on and so forth, are a totally different public standard than what common sense would prevail. And so until you've gone through the process, seen it, and then the opposite side says, well, no, that's not here. We actually have that over here in this other location. You know, you start throwing people under the bus long before you've even found out that there's a problem. And so, yeah, I'm comfortable with this bill. And I know I wasn't here for the testimony, but having been through the process, it's at the point where I think, you know, until they come to a conclusion to say, yes, it's good, yes, it's bad, kind of like a court of law, or an administrative procedure that, you know, to throw things out and say, well, we have a question, and as you well know, the question might be on the front page of the newspaper the next day, and it turned out that it was perfectly fine, and there's a great explanation, and it even benefits the public, but the retraction isn't printed by the newspaper. Mm-hmm. Some of us have experienced that.
Oh, yes.
So.
Oh, yes. And Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Monroe.
I remember the testimony, and I was very impressed with a representative from the Newspapers Association and the compromises that they went through to clean this bill up and make sure that it did not disadvantage the right of the public to know. And so I'm very strongly supporting it.
Okay. Good. Well, we're in work session. Senator George?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2247 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George moved House Bill 2247 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Debbie, please call the roll.
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Boakley?
Sure.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
And Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye. Senator George, would you carry that one?
I'll carry it if he doesn't want it.
Yeah, I wasn't here for the... I don't think I was here for the testimony.
Okay. Senator Boakley? Thank you.
Maybe it was aye, but I'll make it up as
no,
I go.
That was the day you guys were working on.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Oh, after you close this one.
Plus, I didn't know if you, how many times I could tie it to the industry.
So let's close the work session on House Bill 2247.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to request that I be able to vote on House Bill 3590. I'm sorry, I had to leave the room.
Is that the only one?
Excuse me, 3590, the car seat bill.
Oh.
2212
Oh, you did that one too?
Yeah, you need to vote on the flower bill.
We'll need to do them separately.
Senator George, would you like to make a motion to suspend the rules?
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules and reopen consideration on House Bill 3590 as to allow Senator Bonamici to cast a vote.
Senator George has moved that the rules be suspended to allow Senator Bonamici to vote on House Bill 3590. Is there any objection? Seeing none, it is reopened. Senator Bonamici, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Senator Bonamici votes aye. I will then close the work session. Close the work session on House Bill 3590. And Senator George.
Do you want to open a work session on
2212? Open a work session on House Bill 2212.
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules and reopen consideration of House Bill 2212A as so Senator Bonamici could cast a vote.
Senator George has moved that we suspend the rules to allow Senator Bonamici to vote on House Bill 2212A. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Bonamici, how do you vote?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to give this one a courtesy vote, but I still want to look at certain issues, so I'll be an aye, but want to retain the ability to be an O on the floor if I discover that I've changed my mind. Thank you.
So
we should have to repeat all of that.
All right, Representative Comp, if you're listening, you got your work cut out for you. Close the work session on House Bill 2212. And let's see, I will open a work session on House Bill 2809. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2809, we heard back on April 27th, it's a measure that deletes the requirement for certain special districts to sign and countersign contract deeds, warrants, releases, receipts, and other documents. The measure has no amendment, no fiscal impact, no revenue impact. House vote was 58-0. We had testimony. There's folks in the room to answer any questions if you have any, but that's where we stand, Mr. Chair.
All right. We are in work session. Senator George, are you comfortable making the motion?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2809 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 2809 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Debbie, please call the roll.
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Boakley?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye. And
Senator Byers' bill.
Oh, it is? All right. Why don't we have Senator Byers carry that?
Representative Byers' bill.
Oh, Representative.
And Senator Byers. No, you're right. He's
okay.
Both of them. We'll ask Senator Byers to be the carrier.
Well, if you'd had Senator George carried, I would have asked him questions on the floor about it.
Tit for tat here.
And colleagues, I'd like to stand at ease for a moment before we consider House Bill 3000 to confer with one of the proponents. I'll be right back.
come back to order, colleagues, and I will open the work session on House Bill 3000A. Senator Bonamici, would you like to make the motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3000A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bonamici has moved House Bill 3000A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I like 5% better than 10. I should clarify that when this has actually been at several sessions, and we went back and looked through Legislative Revenue Office and identified that, you know, it's somewhere right around the 5% mark is where the state gets its tax benefit and everything else back because of taxes paid, so on and so forth. And that's why I previously supported these 5% level ones.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great idea. I'm still going to vote against Representative Flynn. But
and just Mr. Chair, I just want to state for the record that it certainly could be 5% because it doesn't say 10%. It says up to 10%.
I know. The proponents argue with that, too.
All right. Any further discussion? Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Boquist?
No.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Nope.
And Chair Shearer?
Chair votes aye.
Mr. Chair?
Motion carries. Senator George?
I serve notice of a potential minority report.
Senator George has moved notice of a potential minority report. And I'm very pleased that Senator Bonamici has agreed to carry this bill. So I will close the work session on House Bill 3000.
Chair.
Mr. Chair, I doubt that Senator Boquist and I are going to be able to come to an agreement on a minority report. So I think there's a pretty low possibility on that one.
That works for me.
We're good.
We are adjourned.